IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We have been on the road this week. We have been on the tennis court. We have been
on the beach.
On the beach. We have been
on the boardwalk.
Driving on the boardwalk. Yeah, everywhere.
On the ferry.
On the ferry most of the time. Yeah, that's true. As you might guess, we're in Newport Beach. We have a daughter who she and her friends have some lovely places here on the beach, and we are borrowing it for a week because we're here for a tennis tournament for Richard.
You know, when you get to the point in life where you can actually use some stuff that belongs to your kids, that's a turnaround. That's a 180. That's like the first shall be last and the last shall be first.
Right. It's so nice. After all these years, and now it's us saying, where's the key?
Yeah.
How can we get in? This doesn't work.
It still hasn't completely swung over to that balance, but it's getting there.
No, that's true.
And we're just so excited to be back with you. And we feel like the last 12 weeks of IRS on the Road, with the exception of last week, which was a little rerun of an older podcast, we've been kind of on the same channel. We've been talking about this article series, this series of essays that we've been doing. And it's been, I don't know, I guess I'd say it's been kind of heavy, right? I mean, in a good way, hopefully.
Yeah.
We've been talking about some of the deeper things we believe about eternity and about life before this life and life after this life and heavenly parents and inclusivity of all God's children and timelessness when we get to a point where there is no time, and how everything seems to us to become family-centric in the end. And bless your hearts, those of you who've listened to all of these, because you now know pretty much everything we believe.
Yeah, that is for sure. And maybe more than you wanted to know. But we really do appreciate your hanging in or dropping in when you can. Today, we're going to do a little something on a little lighter note. Or maybe heavier.
Maybe heavier. But it's we're going to get back to something that we've had a lot of comments from listeners on. And we're going to talk about another three-letter lesson. And Linda, can you believe this is number 38 in the series of three-letter lessons?
Oh,
38. And I think when we get to 50, we're just going to cut it off and put it into a book.
Called
Three-Letter Lessons. And all it is really is little three-letter words or abbreviations that hold some special meaning for us and that seem to sort of symbolize a particular attitude or an approach or a paradigm or a way of looking at things that seems to us to be good. It seems to work. It seems to shed perspective and awareness. And we like the fact that just they're three little letters and you can remember them and you can sort of plant them in your brain, and they can begin to guide how we think and how we react to things and how we pursue life and what we notice and what we see. And so today we approach it with a little trepidation because three-letter word number 38 is age, A-G-E.
And that's only because we're thinking about it a lot.
We really are. We think about the word age politically. We think about it in terms of our own personal lives. We think about it in terms of a lot of our friends. We think about it in terms of the different ways that age is perceived in different parts of the world. In some parts of the world, age sort of equals respect and deference and paying attention to someone who has a little wisdom and a few years behind them. And in other parts of the world, frankly, pretty much this part of the world, age often means irrelevance. It often means, you know, you're a burden, you're put out to pasture, you're over the hill. And, you know, we even try to turn around some of those old cliches that over the hill is not a bad place to be for you when you're riding your bike.
Right. Just you've done the hard work and now you're going downhill. The wind is blowing through your hair. It's exhilarating. But I can't say that for every day.
Well, and I'm a horse guy and being put out to pasture is not a bad thing either. Being put out to stud.
Right.
Anyway, we want to delve into the idea of age. Now, there's another three-letter word we could have used instead of age, and it's the word old, O-L-D. Why do you think we chose age instead of old for our three-letter word?
I was just going to say, let's not do that one. because aging is, has two sides of a coin. There's some beautiful things about it. There's some hard things about it. But old is just plain duddy.
Well, you know, old is an adjective. And adjectives are not nearly as interesting as nouns or verbs. Well, they can be, I suppose. But the nice thing about the word age is that it's both a noun and a verb. I mean, age is a thing. And you can use it in many ways. You can use it to describe the different phases of the world, the age of enlightenment, the age of the Renaissance, the age of antiquity, the age of modernity. It's about time. Age is about time, and time is an inherently fascinating topic. And you can use it as a verb. He's aging. We are aging. We are all aging. And I just think it's a fascinating word because what does it imply to you? Maybe we should have started off by just saying, let's play word association. When you hear the word age, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I think many people would say yuck or bad or uh-oh or something to dread or, you know, some negative connotation. And that's too bad because age.
Well, when you say aging,
yeah,
that means something. I mean, just age can be 12, you know, 15,
sure,
at your age. But yeah, when you say you're aging, then that's a little different.
So why do we have such a mixed sort of perspective on aging and what can we do about it? And we saw a movie last night, a fascinating movie in that we looked it up after we got home and the critics, 18% of the critics liked it. It was a splat on Rotten Tomatoes. And every single critic that reviewed it hated it. But on the audience scores, 98% of those who went to the movie loved it. I've never seen that big of a discrepancy on a movie. And
I think we could see both sides of that because it was kind of funny, but it was so fun. It was a romp through time for us because it was a time when we lived, we were doing wild things in Washington, D.C. And the name of the movie, by the way, was Reagan.
Brand new movie, worth seeing if you're one of the 98% in the audience. If you're a critic, don't bother to go.
That sounds good.
But why do I bring that up when we're talking about age?
Well, because we all age and we are aging.
Well, Reagan aged and the movie ended on a tender note talking about Reagan getting Alzheimer's and living another 10 years and then Nancy living another decade beyond that. And it was very tender in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's interesting that Reagan was at the time the oldest president we've ever had in the United States. And that was eclipsed by Biden and it will be or would be eclipsed. Let's not get into politics.
Yeah, let's not. So I think you know. But anyway, but it really was so interesting for us, and especially you, because you actually wrote a campaign plan for Reagan when he ran for office. And So you were intimately involved with that group. And
with him to some degree. And it was an interesting time for us because we had just returned from our mission presidency in London just in time for the campaign. We got back in 79. That seems ancient, doesn't it? But there we were, young, still really young in our early 30s. And I'd been doing politics for a long time. And Bill Casey, Reagan's campaign manager, had admired some of the work that my two partners and I had done. And so I ended up writing a grassroots organizing campaign and joining Reagan's campaign in 1980. And he was in a lot of the meetings. I remember one particularly when he nodded off. He was tired from campaigning, but he was an interesting, interesting man. Mainly, I thought, because he had a clear ideology. Reagan, for right or for wrong, knew what he believed and was able to make decisions based on an ideology or on a belief system and didn't have to figure things out on the fly. His ideology kind of dictated the decisions he made. So not to get off on that tangent, but I brought it up because of Reagan, because so many people now, and thank goodness for people like Reagan who sort of took the stigma out of Alzheimer's to some degree, but a very dear friend of ours, a lifelong friend, just recently passed away from Lewy body dementia, which is the worst kind of memory loss ever that carries physical symptoms as well. And I had the honor to speak at his funeral, and that got us thinking a lot about age. He was too young. He was a little younger than we are. And it was quite an experience to be there with so many of our friends and see what was going on with Randall.
Well, and just going back to Reagan for just a minute, he did some amazing things for our family. When he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall," it affected our family, affected the whole world, of course. And of course, the German world and all that was going on at that time.
Yeah, our two oldest daughters served their LDS missions in Romania and Bulgaria. And of course, the one that went to Bulgaria couldn't have gone there if the wall hadn't come down. And what an interesting time it was, honey. And by the way, we're also reading a book right now called Water for Elephants. It's a book that's been out 15 years or so, but it starts off with a 93-year-old man who runs away with the circus. Again, he had run away with the circus as a young man, but it's an interesting juxtaposition of age and how you see things as you become older.
Right. It's fascinating. We're going to take a little break, but then we're really going to dive into age.
And we're not just going to talk about age as a thing. We're going to talk about the perspective of different ages and so on, and why we think it's a critical three-letter word.
Right. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. We are, actually, we enjoy talking about age, as long as we don't have to do it. And then we have to do it anyway. But it's been a really kind of interesting experience.
You know, we had a good friend, you remember him well, Linda, a doctor, a kind of a country doctor up in Idaho. I say had in the past tense. He's still our really good friend. But he once said to me something. We were driving along. I can still remember where we were. And he said, "You know, Rick, you only get to grow old once in all of eternity." He said, "We have several births in our faith and so on. We're born as a baby and we're born again when we're baptized. And we even sometimes call death a birth because it's a birth into an eternity and into life. But the process of aging, That only happens once in all of eternity. And we ought to really enjoy it because we'll never get to do it again. I thought, what an interesting way to look at it. But there is something wonderful about the perspective that comes with age. And I think we're headed for some real problems in this country because we don't respect age enough, and we don't talk about age diversity. You know, we're all about diversity right now in America, and having racial diversity and having gender diversity and having sexual orientation diversity and embracing it all and all learning to appreciate each other. And it's a wonderful sentiment, but too seldom does it include age diversity. So many tech companies, I mean, the joke is that if you're over 40, you're not trustworthy, or you're so out of touch that you're not worth anything. And younger and younger, and it makes sense because it's the younger people that really grow up with technology and understand it, and a lot of older people don't. But age diversity in a company makes a company stronger, or in a government or in any other place, the diversity of age, the young with the old. Some of the best church meetings we've ever been to were when it was organized so that youth, teenagers, would sit across the table from an octogenarian and learn to talk to each other and learn to appreciate each other. Something beautiful about that age diversity.
Well, we especially appreciate that with our grandchildren.
Yeah.
There certainly is an age diversity there. Our oldest is 28. Is that right? And
our
the youngest
grandchild
is
three.
Well, we've got a great grandchild who's almost one and a half.
And can we say, is it okay to say that we have another great grandchild on the way?
I think so.
Oh my gosh, that is exciting. I mean, we're really going to talk about age. That's where it gets cool, right?
Absolutely. Oh man, our first little great grandchild. Mom called me yesterday to thank me for a gift, and that cute little baby just got right up on the camera and gave me a big kiss.
Right on the screen.
Oh my gosh, he is so cute. That is real joy. They're so fun. And the best part is they really don't have to take care of them. I mean, you know, grandchildren's one thing, but great grandchildren, you just have fun with them, and they're just so awesome. So there are some great things in getting older.
We just went to a conference. Some of you who are listening, I know, went there because several of you came up and talked to us. But it was a Faith Matters conference. And I'd say the average age there, Linda, was in the 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
I said to the organizers, a great friend of ours, and I was complimenting him on what a great conference it was. And he was getting a lot of compliments. And the only thing I had to say that would have made it better is if there had been more age diversity, if there had been more older people there, not only in the audience, but participating on the program, just to give it that breadth, that wider view of how things look to different people in different ages, different circumstances.
But it was a really amazing conference that brought to light many beautiful things about every age, every occupation, every great endeavor. There was a man there who started the Other Side Academy, who was a drug addict himself, in and out of prison many times, and he and his children, and absolutely gave the most spectacular speech I think I've ever heard, as far as including everybody, changing your life, becoming better as you get older. And I just think that it is really sad when people think things have to get sad and dreary when you're old, because being old is great. I think it's awesome. There's a couple of things I don't like about it, but other than that.
Well, and back to the Water for Elephants book that we're reading, the narrator, the first of the book, who's in an old folks home. What a funny name that is. But he's so descriptive, talking about the processed sort of pablum food that he has to eat and the lack of freedom and how people are just sort of warehoused on a shelf and so on. And It is a cultural thing. I mean, if you spend time in Japan or in Korea or in many Asian countries,
Saudi,
where
all the Middle Eastern,
where people usually live at least three generations in a home, and it's the older, it's the grandparents who are revered. It's the grandparents who are sought out for advice. It's the grandparents who often make the final decisions on things. A complete reversal of how it is in some Western countries. And you know, that is a burden on both the old and the young. I mean, how often lately have you heard people bemoaning the fact that they're trying to not only care for their kids, but also their parents, and what a burden to have it from both sides, and how do we deal with this? And of course, it is a legitimate issue, but and then from the old person's point of view, there's just a question of relevance. We have a group we meet with where a lot of people are older than we are, which is saying something. And when you ask the question, what is the biggest concern you have right now? Sort of the overwhelming, not overwhelming, but the predominant answer is, well, I just don't feel relevant anymore, which is so crazy when you think about it, because with their life experience and what they know, in some ways, they should be the most relevant. Now, Linda loves Arthur Brooks, the writer, the Harvard guy who writes a lot about aging. And he talks about two different kinds of intelligence.
Right. Yes, he's really incredible. There's emotional intelligence. And then there's just intelligence that you learn, that you've gathered for your whole life.
Yeah, and within that gathering, that mental intelligence, Brooks likes to say there's two kinds. There's fluid intelligence, which you do lose as you get older. But then there's something else called crystallized intelligence, his term, which I'm not sure he chose the best word for that. It sounds a little like it's sort of
hardening.
Petrified.
Hardening.
But what he means is the intelligence that also contains wisdom and experience and being able to come to conclusions based on a lot of data that you've accumulated over your life. So it's not as fluid as a younger person's intelligence, but it's more nuanced, it's more broad, it's more complete in a lot of ways, right?
Well, I think you understand things differently as you get older, because you've had so much life experience.
Right.
And it does crystallize. You've crystallized in your mind your ideology. Sometimes for older people, that's not a good thing because they're crystallized in the wrong direction. But I think by and large, having all that information in your mind is so interesting. And I do have to say that we forget things once in a while. There's a few names on that can't remember.
Luckily, we rarely both forget the same person's name at the same time.
Right. In fact, yesterday I came and I said, okay, two names. I've got two names I need to help with today. And you just popped them right out.
I knew them both.
But on the other hand, you know, there are times when you come to me and do the same thing.
Exactly.
What is this and what is that? Anyway, it really is a fascinating experience to get older. But this whole thing of crystallized intelligence, I think, is so right, because you've had so much life experience. And sometimes we don't always feel appreciated for all that. But usually we can come up with solutions to things because of the experience we've had that we couldn't have done when we were younger.
So I'm going to ask two questions to conclude with. And by the way, if you're a young person and you've been hanging in and listening, wondering if this is at all relevant to you, hang in there, because my first question is, whose fault is it that a lot of elderly people or seniors or people who are aging feel as irrelevant as they do and as useless? Is that their fault, or is it the fault of their children and their grandchildren, who fail to make them feel relevant, who fail to ask them for advice, who fail to honor the experience they've had, who treat them as though they don't have anything to contribute. Whose fault really is that? I ask that kind of as a rhetorical question. I really think the answer is both.
Yeah, I do too, for sure. Because some people just kind of give up and say, okay, I'm ready to just sit in the rocking chair and read or watch TV all day. And there are others that just like, no, I am not going there. And it's kind of, in a way, what you expect. Your grandchildren, respect, and they give it. If you expect nothing, to just be treated as a person that's in their life, but sad because you're kind of half gone.
Yeah.
I think you get that. But they think what they see, you know, and if you are kind of receding in life, they can see that. They don't always help. They always sometimes maybe just put you in that little pocket there. But I think we determine that a lot by our own verbiage, by our own actions.
Well said, Linda. So it's the fault of both. So if you're a younger person, and it is interesting that it's, sort of one of the Ten Commandments, right? Honor your father and your mother, whatever age they are, and do it by seeing their relevance and realizing how much they've experienced that you haven't. And if you're an older person yourself, step up, demand respect in a respectful way and stay active. Now, here's the last question. We're going to end on a real upper, and we're going to have to be careful because we've only got 2 minutes and we could go on for an hour on this. What is the greatest thing about growing older? And I am reminded of a book we saw on a coffee table one time that said, "The Joys of Growing Older." And then it looked like a really solid,
there are quotes
book
on the front and the back all about how fun it was.
And you then opened
the book, and the pages are all blank. I love that.
So that was funny, but it was also kind of a slap in the face. And we almost thought we should write one and fill in all those pages, because there are so many things that are great about being over the hill, out to pasture, all those cliches. Number one is the grandkids. Come on, that's number one.
It is, and you don't have to prepare 3 meals a day. You can do whatever you want. I love that, and I love being able to express what I feel and not being worried about what somebody might think. And
that's really a big one, yeah.
I love the whole idea of having freedom, so much more freedom to think, to do what I want to do, even though every day I wake up and think, okay, now this is the day I can just do whatever I want. But no, we're not at that stage. You cannot. There are so many things. I'm organizing one family event, one musical event right now, and you're helping with that. And there are always things that you need to do, you have to do. I keep thinking, why can't I get to the end of this so I can just do what I want to do? But that's part of the joy of growing older, is still having things to do, things you want to accomplish, and so on.
So we speak a lot lately to grandparents about grandparenting, but we also get into this whole age thing a little bit. And one of the questions we like to ask a big audience is, how many of you, if you had a magic wand right now, would go back and be younger, be 50 or be 40 or be 30? And about maybe 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 raises their hand. And then we say, well, why wouldn't you go back? What about you, majority? Why? And they're like, oh, now is the best time. Now is really the best time. We have our family around us. And some of them don't. Some are single. But it's interesting how a lot of older people, irrespective of how many children or, posterity they may have, just find a way to really be part of the solution. They volunteer in schools, or they find ways to share what they know. And I think that the real thing we're hoping for ourselves and for a lot of people who are moving along is that we're comfortable in our own skin. We understand that this is a rare opportunity. We understand that growing old is way better than the alternative.
And that is for sure. And dealing with your hips and your knees and whatever it is.
It's part of the deal.
It's part of the deal. And we really love it. It's a beautiful time of life. So, and it is grandparenting week this week.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're thinking a lot about our beautiful grandchildren. And they're just... I just don't think there's a better time in life myself, but maybe you disagree with that. And let's see, can you call us?
I'm glad you mentioned Grandparenting Week. There is a seminar, a national online seminar, Grandparents Academy. Put that in your browser if you're interested. We're doing a little presentation every day that's pre-recorded on there and a lot of good advice. If you're a grandparent, if you're a younger person, just remember, respect your elders and do it not by just looking at them in the right way. Do it by involving them and by asking. The best thing you can do for any elderly person is ask them for advice. I guarantee you will benefit from it, and so will they.
And so we leave you with that. Thanks for joining us, and we hope that you are getting better every day.
Three-letter lesson, age. Remember the lessons.
We'll see you next time on Tires on the Road. Bye-bye.